This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Before opening arguments in the impeachment trial of U.S. President Donald Trump in the U.S. Senate Tuesday, this Sunday, key players once again argued whether efforts to get Ukraine to launch investigations on a political rival are impeachable offenses that warrant his removal from office.
Senators swear an oath of impartiality, but the Republican leader of the Senate has previously said he is working hand-in-hand with the White House.
Imagine that they are a juror, and the judge comes into the courtroom and says, look, I've been in consultation with the defendant, and we've agreed that I'm not going to allow the prosecution to call any witnesses, and I'm not going to allow the prosecution to show you any documents. No juror has ever heard that kind of a thing from a judge because it would be absurd.
The president this week again said he did nothing wrong in a July phone call with Ukraine's president in which Trump asks for investigation into a political rival. At the time, Trump was withholding $400 million in congressionally approved military aid. The Trump defense team argues impeachment should never have happened as the aid was eventually released with no announcement of an investigation. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
There are now three confirmed deaths resulting from the new coronavirus that's plaguing a region of China and has World Health Organizations on edge. In just a few days, the central Chinese city of Wuhan confirmed 136 new cases of the pneumonia-like virus akin to the SARS virus that killed nearly 800 people globally 17 years ago. In the U.S., as a precaution, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention started screening passengers arriving from Wuhan at three airports at San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York. Airports in Japan, Thailand, South Korea, and Singapore are also screening their passengers. This is VOA News. World leaders agreed Sunday to respect an arms embargo and postpone military support to the two factions at a summit aimed at heading off a true regional escalation of fighting in Libya. 12 world leaders, as well as representatives from the United Nations, the European Union, the African Union, and the Arab League, met in Germany Sunday in hopes of laying a foundation for a lasting ceasefire between Libya's rival governments. VOA's Gladys Ahok has reaction from British Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Libyan people have suffered enough in what he called a proxy conflict.
Proxy conflicts only come to an end when the external proxies decide they want to bring it to an end. So that's what the UK is arguing for. We're saying, look, come on, folks, this has gone on for long enough. It's a disgrace. Yes, we got rid of Gaddafi back in 2011, but it's time now to move on and to bring Libya together under the UN.
Supporters for both sides in Libya demonstrated during the conference in Berlin. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
It will be Venezuela's opposition leader, not President Nicolas Maduro, that the U.S.'s top diplomat is meeting with on Monday. Reuters' Freddie Joyner.
America's top diplomat on Sunday said he was looking forward to meeting Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made the comments to reporters on board a flight from Germany, and they confirmed what sources close to Guaido told Reuters earlier. Both men on Monday will be at a summit hosted by Colombia on combating terrorism. Guaido has not left Venezuela since February, when he defied a court-imposed travel ban and traveled to neighboring Colombia to organize a U.S.-backed effort to transport aid cargo back across the border, which was blocked by troops loyal to President Nicolas Maduro. The United States, along with 50 other nations, has recognized Guaido as Venezuela's legitimate head of state following an election in 2018. But a year later, President Nicolas Maduro remains in power.
That is Reuters' Freddie Joyner reporting. And some onlookers are wondering if President Trump shows up at a meeting of world policymakers in a Swiss ski resort of Davos.
U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to dominate headlines again if he shows up. While some world leaders will skip this year's Davos, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has told his ministers to avoid an event seen by many as elitist. Although Schwab insists, Johnson told him he'd be back next year. In a bid to preempt criticism that its jet-set guests are part of the problem, the World Economic Forum says this year's Davos will be fully carbon neutral for the first time.
Reuters Conway Giddens. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, January 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Guinea's opposition party sued the country's elections commission.
They are not supposed to act beyond the boundaries of the law, and that is exactly what has been going on.
Faya Milimuno is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. Liberia's anti-government protest leader vows a return to Liberia, even as the government launches a criminal investigation against him. And Cameroon separatists and government trade accusations of torturing villages.
I can tell you the amount of villages in town razed down by French Cameroon troops has already surpassed the number of homes and villages burned down in the last 3 years.
Chris Anu is the spokesman for Cameroon's Ambazonian separatists. The WHO says antibiotic resistance is growing, and Benin Museum celebrates the return of precious artifacts from France. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, FNDC, the group that has been organizing protests against an alleged third term for Guinean President Alpha Condé, says it has sued the Independent National Elections Commission, SENE, at the Constitutional Court. Faya Milimono, the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party, says everything that the commission has done so far about the scheduled February 16 legislative election, including the timeline for registration of candidates, is illegal. Milimuno also says opposition groups will stage another nationwide protest tomorrow, Tuesday, against President Alpha Condé's decision to change the constitution to seek another third term.
On Tuesday, we will be having demonstrations on the streets. It will be around the country. All the cities around the country, we will be having demonstrations on Tuesday and Wednesday. The second thing happening right now is the opposition parties have launched a lawsuit at the Constitutional Court to demonstrate that everything going on is illegal. They're acting clearly beyond the boundary of the law. It's like we are no longer a republic. So that lawsuit, we will be having some results this week starting today.
Are you saying you are making this lawsuit against the Elections Commission or against the government?
It's going to be against the Electoral Commission because they are not supposed to act beyond the boundary of the law. And that is exactly what has been going on.
How is the Elections Commission acting beyond its boundary? It is the Elections Commission.
Let me give you one example. According to the electoral law of the land, when it is about the parliamentary election, the candidacy have to be submitted at last 60 days before the election day. Instead of receiving the candidate applications, they have started on the 60th day. So everything that they did was completely out of. Normally, 2 days ago, they should have started distributing the electoral ID cards to people. And they are still 16 days from being able to start doing it. So everything that is being done today is completely beyond the boundary of the law.
But has the opposition made up its mind to say you want to participate in these elections? If not, what's the purpose of the lawsuit?
The reason why all the opposition parties have not submitted the application to be candidates is because everything going on is beyond the boundary of the law. So if we get involved in this kind of process, it's like participating in the process that is going to be, in the end, a problem for the country. We don't want any violence to happen in this country. So that's why we don't want any process that is not transparent, that is not inclusive, that is not legal.
The last time you had protest, the government accused you of violence, and you also accused the government. Are you setting yourself up again for more violence?
As far as the opposition I belong to is concerned, everything we do is nonviolent. Everything we do is in between the boundary of the law.
What is the purpose now for the new protest on Tuesday?
we have said it clearly that at this time we consider, after demonstrating many times, and the president has decided to go forward and submit a new constitution to seek the third term, we consider that the people of Guinea are being oppressed. So the constitution of the land, the Article 21 clearly said that when we face those kind of situations, the people of this country have the right to resist. So this time, we don't want the constitution to be manipulated for the simple purpose of having somebody getting a third term.
Fayyad Milimuno is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. In Liberia, the leader of the Council of Patriots, organizers of two large anti-government protests so far, says he will return to the country in May this year. Henry Costa fled Liberia clandestinely last week and was arrested in Sierra Leone en route to the United States. He told Sierra Leone authorities not to extradite him because the Liberian government would kill him. He arrived in the United States late last week. Meanwhile, the Liberian government is investigating an employee of the foreign ministry for helping Costa obtain a laissez-passer. Costa says he plans to return to Liberia because the charges of forged travel documents against him are politically motivated and would not keep him out of the country.
I plan on going back to Liberia in May when school closes. That time, I will have a lot of time on my hands, the summer break. I should be prepared to face any legal battles, howbeit politically motivated. So I'm certainly going home. I will not allow myself to be chased out of my country permanently.
As you know, you escaped extradition back to Liberia from Sierra Leone. And now the Minister of Information told us that they have some criminal charges against you, that you committed some crimes that they wanted you back to Liberia for. Do you think you still go back to Liberia under these conditions?
Yes, I will go home. These charges are politically motivated. I obtained the laissez-passer in a legitimate fashion. It was accepted by the government when I arrived at the airport on the 19th of December. For them to now be making the argument that the laissez-passer was forged is a cheap attempt by the government to get at me for what our organization, the Council of Patriots, has been doing, holding peaceful protests, bringing the world's attention to the ills being committed against the Liberian people, the rampant corruption, the bad governance, the divisiveness of the regime. These are the reasons why they're targeting me. So I'm not afraid. I will go home in May. But before I do, rest assured, we will make the necessary representations here in the U.S. We will lobby members of Congress in order to bring to their attention what's happening in our country so that they can arrest it, bring it under control in order to safeguard the country's peace and stability. You might have heard the Minister of Information charge me with insurrection. Imagine such a serious charge. That's treason. What did I do that warrants such a charge? Is it because organized peaceful protests? The regime is hoping and praying that I should stay out of the country and not go back. And that is the reason why they're conjuring up these ridiculous charges and thinking that they would scare men and I will kowtow in submission. But I will not. I will go home.
So what do you know about this Mr. Sylvester? We understand is being investigated by the Liberian Immigration Services.
Sylvester Tevez Knight actually, or was, before his resignation a few days ago, an employee of mine. He was my operations manager in Liberia at the radio station. He basically ran errands for me. He was the one who I sent to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to process the laissez-passer. And he decided for some reason to cooperate with the government, and he's been telling them exactly what he thinks is going to get him out of the situation. So he's named names. He's put a lot of people in trouble, a lot of innocent people, and it is very unfortunate.
You said Sylvester Tevez has put a lot of people in trouble. Are you saying what he's talking about is not true or is true?
It is not true. Sylvester used to be my right-hand man, and for some reason he betrayed me. And so he has named names of innocent people whom I'm told are being called in for questioning by this rogue regime. And they have been slammed to all kinds of ridiculous trumped-up charges over a laissez-passer.
You know, some say that the mere fact that you're out of the country, the government of Liberia has succeeded getting you out of its way.
That's true, Mr. Borte. That's true. Everybody knows that. The government is excited that I've left the country. Because when I'm in a country, we have managed to build a strong following, something for which we are humbled. and we are engaged in constructive, peaceful agitation to hold the government's feet to the fire.
Henry Costa is the leader of the Council of Patriots, organizers of two anti-government protests in Liberia. He was speaking with us from the U.S. state of Delaware. Today is Monday, January 20th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Cameroon separatists and the government have been trading accusations about who is responsible for increased pre-election violence in the Anglophone regions of the country. The separatists are accused of threatening security in the region ahead of the scheduled February 9th legislative and municipal elections, including kidnapping of opposition candidates. Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed interim government of Ambazonia. He says the Cameroon military has intensified its crackdown in the Anglophone regions, including demolishing villages.
On the New Year's Eve, Mr. Biya redeclared war, essentially, on the southern Cameroons. And I can tell you the amount of villages in town razed down by French Cameroon troops has already surpassed the number of homes and villages burned down in the last 3 years. If we were to put out the pictures that we have, people will be shocked what is happening in the southern Cameroons. Biya is bent on forcing an election on the territory of the southern Cameroons. The southern Cameroonians are saying, you can keep on killing and burning down our homes and our villages. No elections are taking place in our territory organized by French Cameroon.
But I was just reading an article, and the government says that, in fact, your group have been threatening security there because you don't want the elections to be held.
We are not threatening security anywhere. We own our territory, we own our country, and we do not want infiltrators. They are infiltrators, intruders. We want them out. They are the aggressors in this war. And so the idea that we are threatening security, security for who? Our people are not agitating. They are the ones agitating because they are illegally occupying our territory. And we will go to any extent to do anything to get them out of our territory. We keep on telling them we are no longer part of one and indivisible Cameroon. We are Ambazonians, not Cameroonians. They are intruders in our territory, and we will go to any extent to get rid of them.
What is it that can make possible the February 9th election? Would any negotiation, dialogue make possible or get you on the side of the election?
Well, I don't see anything making February 9th possible because, again, even if they were to pull out of our territory, for as long as we are not an independent country, we cannot organize or have any elections. The point is that, James, French Cameroon doesn't have the authority and the power to organize elections in a country that doesn't belong to them. So no matter what they do, they can never again organize any public event, not just election, in our territory. The African Cup of Nations coming up next year, and they are touting our territory as hosting it. We have said even that one, too, is not going to happen because French Cameroon, we are no longer part of French Cameroon. We are the Federal Republic of Ambazonia.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed interim government of Ambazonia. He was speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston. The World Health Organization says hundreds of thousands of people will die from antimicrobial resistance because new drugs to treat drug-resistant infections are not being developed. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization says at least 700,000 people die every year due to drug-resistant diseases, including 230,000 from multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. Last year, a UN report predicted growing antimicrobial resistance could cause 10 million deaths each year by 2050 and trigger a financial crisis. The WHO says the health threat affects everyone, but those most at risk include people whose immune system system is compromised, the elderly, those undergoing chemotherapy, surgery, and organ transplants. The WHO senior advisor on antimicrobial resistance, Peter Beyer, says 50 antibiotics are in the pipeline, but the majority only have limited benefits when compared to existing antibiotics.
We are running actually out of antibiotics that are effective against these resistant bacteria. It takes about maybe 10 years to develop a new antibiotic. So if we go back to phase one, we know exactly what at best we can get over the next 10 years. And we really see that it's insufficient to counter the current threat.
Beyer says scientifically, it is very difficult to come up with truly new, innovative antibiotics. Another problem, he says, is that there is little financial incentive for pharmaceutical companies to develop a new drug. He says it is risky, it takes a lot of time and money, and the monetary returns are likely to be poor. However, he tells VOA he believes that the industry will change its position and develop new antibiotics, because they also need these new drugs.
For example, if they want to sell products for chemotherapy, they really need effective antibiotics, because otherwise you can't do effective chemotherapy, in particular in countries like India or Bangladesh, where infection prevention control is not that good. So I do think that industry, at one point in time, they will turn around. That's our hope. And we, of course, try to convince governments to invest as well.
In the meantime, Beyer says one of the most cost-effective life-saving measures is better infection and prevention control in hospitals. Instead of inventing new drugs to treat people who get infected in hospitals, he says it makes more sense to protect them from getting infected in the first place. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
More than 2 years after France promised to return colonial-era treasures to their African homes, Benin, ostensibly the first recipient of the groundbreaking policy, still awaits them. But on Friday last week, a small museum outside of Cotonou celebrated the return of antique royal scepters gifted by a group of Paris gallery owners. Lisa Bryant has the story from Paris.
In 2017, French President Emmanuel Macron sparked joy and unease when he announced colonial-era treasures from Africa would be returned or shared through exhibitions and loans. The first gesture would be the speedy return to Benin of 26 objects looted by French colonial forces in 1892. But turning that promise into reality is not so easy. Only last December did France's culture minister offer a concrete timetable, saying the objects now housed at Paris's leading African art museum will be returned by 2021. Enter a group of Paris Left Bank gallery owners whose private efforts are moving much more quickly than public ones. They have not only acquired and returned precious antiques to Benin for years, but raised funds to build a small museum outside Cotonou to house them. On Friday, that institution, the Petit Musée de la Rocade, welcomed one of its biggest troves to date, more than two dozen pieces, including 17 scepters coming from the ancient kingdom of Dahomey, located in parts of what is modern-day Benin. Speaking by phone from Cotonou, Paris gallery owner Robert Valois says the gesture doesn't constitute restitution of ill-gotten art. Instead, he and his colleagues bought the antiques in France with the specific intent of returning them to Benin. Macron's restitution promise has been more complicated to realize. It means changing French laws and ensuring old and fragile pieces are properly housed. With French support, Benin is building a new museum in Abomey, once the capital of Dahomey Kingdom. José Plia, head of Benin's National Agency for Heritage Promotion and Tourism Development, spoke to VOA about the process last year.
We have to have the good condition, temperature, isolation, conservation to welcome them. A lot of things have to be done. The training of all the conservators in Benin, how to protect those pieces.
Despite the roadblocks, Macron's restitution vows add pressure on other European countries and museums with African collections.
Non, pas du tout. Nous, on continue dans cette voie-là et on n'écoute personne.
Fadois says he and his gallery group are not part of such debates. They're following their own counsel. And what's important to them is that the objects return to their countries of origin. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
It is 25 past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with Nigeria-born British world heavyweight boxing champion Anthony Joshua, who says he's ready to stand up for Nigeria anytime he's needed to do so. He said this at a meeting with President Muhammadu Buhari in the United Kingdom at the weekend. The 30-year-old Anthony Joshua, who presented his IBF, WBA, WBO and IBO titles to President Muhammadu Buhari, said he will be available should he be needed to do anything for Nigeria.
It's amazing to hear what I'm connected with. So even though I'm running my own track in boxing, I can connect with a lot of the youth from here to Nigeria to America to even countries that don't even involve our culture, but they have respect for us. If there's anything that you guys need me for, I'll stand up for Nigeria.
In handball news, Egypt's national handball team have qualified for the quarterfinals of the African Men's Handball Championship. The Pharaohs earned a hard-fought 23-19 victory over DR Congo on Sunday to remain at the top of Group A after beating Guinea, Kenya and DR Congo. The African Men's Handball Championship is a gateway to the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, as the finalists will secure automatic qualification for the summer's grand stage. And now to athletics. Athletics Kenya are worried that there are still athletes who do not care about their health, Kenya's image internationally, and the integrity of the sports. Recent suspension of 2013 World Junior 800 Meters champion Alfred Kipketer and former World Marathon record holder Wilson Kipsang is raising doping concerns among Kenyan athletes. Despite numerous efforts by Athletics Kenya, Anti-Doping Agency, Athletics Integrity Unit, and World Anti-Doping Agency of Kenya, Athletics Kenya President Jackson Tuwei regretted that athletes are still being caught in violation of this set of rules.
For them, and it is either they work hand in hand and remain clean and remain relevant in the sport or hang their spikes all together, because the anti-doping winds are too strong for those who want to engage in hide and seek.
Staying with Kenya, world 1,500-meter silver medalist Margaret Chilimo stunned world cross-country champion Helen Obiri to win the Cross International de Italica in Sevilla, Spain on Sunday. Chilimo cruised to victory in 28 minutes and 37 seconds, beating compatriots and world cross-country under-20 champion Beatrice Chibet to second place in 28 minutes 49 seconds, as Ethiopian Shahe Gramachun settled third in 29 minutes. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The National Front for the Defense of the Constitution in the Guinea, the group that has been organizing protests against an alleged third term for Guinean President Alpha Conde, says it has sued the Independent National Elections Commission, SINE, at the Constitutional Court. Fayyami Limuno, leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party, says everything that the commission has done so far about the scheduled February 16 legislative election, including the timeline for registration of candidates, is illegal. And Cameroon separatists and the government have been trading accusations about who is responsible for increased pre-election violence in Anglophone regions of the country. And that is it for this Monday, January 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Rock and roll, America's finest export. Our culture and music of today are permanently indebted to the pioneers who trailblazed this musical tradition. Listen to Border Crossings on February 6th to hear rock's greatest musicians like Jerry Lee Lewis, Buddy Holly, and Elvis Presley, only on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States are expanding in Africa. HBCUs on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.